good morning, everyone. Alan Ellis here. This is the first day of the deer firearm season, and I ain't here. But my voice is. So Brian Eiler and I recorded this show on the 18th, I think that's the date. And Brian is the deer project leader. Is that your right title, Brian?
Correct. Good morning.
Wow, good morning. For the for all of the Maryland deer, including whitetails and sika deer and any other deer species that we might have, like fallows, which, you know, there's millions of those out there. Just kidding.
There are a few of them out there, believe it or not.
I do.
Particularly in Talbot County, apparently, where they're showing up in the harvest. So.
Yep, Talbot County, Prince George's, there's some, Queen Anne's, I believe. But, you know, they do show up occasionally in the harvest. And, you know, I'm guessing they've acclimated to the wild from people who were raising them for meat or whatever back in the day.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, are they mentioned in the book, The Guide to Hunting and Trapping?
So they just, unlike sika deer that have a separate season or a separate bag limit, fallow deer just count as whitetails.
Yeah.
And we only ever get a handful every year, so we just roll them in. We don't break them out at this point.
Oh, you don't?
No. If we start, I mean, I keep track, but if we start seeing more and more of them, then we'll actually make a separate section for them.
But
When
the team started bucks, bears, stags, we had a discussion about fallow deer, and we just decided that, you know, we're not even going to have a category for them. So.
Yeah, not at this point. I wouldn't. Like I said, we probably get maybe a half a dozen a year.
Yeah.
Max, you know.
Oh, there's some in Cecil County, too. There used to be a pretty little number of Cecil County deer, too.
Yeah, you hit it. So PG, Cecil, and Queen Anne, Talbot, they seem to be the holdovers.
Yep. So, well, speaking of sika deer, we had the first one ever killed in Cecil County last year.
Correct.
An acquaintance of mine actually shot that deer from a stand that I had occupied in early muzzleloader season on the property that I've hunted for 25 years. So,
yeah, we haven't had any jumpers this year yet.
No jumpers yet, huh?
Not this year.
Well, we may have seen another spike.
It wouldn't surprise me.
During the muzzleloader season, we may have seen another spike. Yeah. So, interesting.
They're just not traveling either, I guess.
Nope. So, look, I've been traveling around, as I do, and, of course, we're in communications with taxidermists and deer processors and hunting retailers and so forth around the state. And we're hearing a lot of mixed reports. Some deer processors are having the best year they've ever had. Others are not having any success at all. Their numbers are off 20-30% in some cases. Some of the avid bow hunters aren't seeing deer. They've got various excuses for, the surrounding hunters shoot anything that moves during the muzzleloader season. Therefore, I'm not seeing anything on my property. We're hearing coyotes. We're hearing EHD. Let's talk first about some of the numbers from the early season, the early bow season through early muzzleloader season, if you've got anything at your fingers there, like we are likely to do here on the first day of deer season. We want to hear how we're doing so far.
Yeah, so first off, it sounds like it's a typical season then. So some people are seeing a lot of deer and some people aren't seeing deer.
Yeah,
it seems to be the case. No, so we actually, I'm pretty sure, set a record actually for the harvest for the first probably 4 or 5 weeks.
Really?
Archery season came in with great weather, if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
It was really cool, and it was nice weather and a lot cooler than what it's been for the last, you know, half a dozen years or so. And we really, at one point, we were up 30% over last season for the same time period. But then that warm weather came back right around the time muzzleloader season, you know, started.
It did.
Muzzleloader season really dropped off, compared to last year. And it kind of flip-flopped, in all honesty. Last year, archery was down some. Muzzleloader was up. This year, early archery was up. Muzzleloader was down.
Okay.
The net change isn't a whole lot. But
right.
But so I think most of the processors probably started out, in most of the state, most of the processors probably started out really well and then slacked off in muzzleloader.
Mm-hmm.
But we did have some EHD, you know, hemorrhagic disease. We did definitely have some of that around this year, heavier than normal in some spots. And that definitely impacts the harvest temporarily. You know, they bounce back. But it definitely does temporarily impact the harvest for a year or two. So those processors that aren't seeing the business, they may be in those areas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we definitely had a lot of reports from Kent and Queen Anne's County and then from Southern Maryland, Charles, St. Mary's, Calvert. And then even into Carroll County. You know, I had reports this year from Carroll County that were most likely HD. So, yeah,
those two factors
definitely probably are playing into it.
We've talked about EHD in the past when you've been on the show, but, you know, for listeners who may have forgotten or who may be new listeners, please explain EHD, epizootic hemorrhagic disease, and how that is transmitted to the deer, what time of year, and what the effects are on the biology of the deer.
Yeah, so it is a virus, and it is spread by midges or no-see-ums, you know, gnats.
Right.
And so the life cycle kind of follows that process. Of the life cycle of the disease or the virus kind of follows the life cycle of the gnat, being that it ramps up in late summer and early fall, and then normally when we get our first frost or start getting colder weather, it kills the no-see-ums or midges, and then the disease goes away. And, you know, we've had hemorrhagic disease since the 70s, you know, and New Jersey actually documented it in the 50s.
Really?
So it's been in the East for a long time. It's been in Maryland for, whatever, 50 years now.
Yeah, sounds like it.
And, we, you know, in every 5 years or so, we'll have a heavier-than-normal outbreak. There's a certain proportion of the deer population that is genetically resistant to it. And as the proportion that is not resistant to it builds up every year, it gets to a point where the disease comes through and kills a lot of deer, frankly, you know,
right,
in certain
sure.
areas.
I believe last year,
proportion builds
yep.
back up,
sorry.
And the deer population builds back up, and then it repeats itself.
Right. I mean, 2 years ago, I believe, it hit Talbot County pretty
yeah.
hard. You know, the Oxford, St. Michael's area was really, you know, really devastated. But
yeah. From Preston to Vienna there a couple years ago, that was probably may have been the heaviest outbreak as far as, like, the density, you know, the number of deer in that area that were impacted. Maybe probably one of the heavier outbreaks that I've experienced
wow.
in my career.
Okay.
You know, it took a lot of deer, you know, and it'll be a few years before that, you know, that population bounces back. But they always come back,
sure.
you know
what
I mean? And I wouldn't expect any different, you know, this year as well.
Well,
so.
The mathematics is this: one buck plus one doe equals two fawns, which is, you know,
exactly.
one plus one equals four in that situation.
Right.
So,
right.
you know, they do have the capacity to double the size of the herd every year, and that's one of the reasons we hunt, is to maintain a sustainable population of deer,
right.
and to reduce the impact of the not only the carrying capacity of the region, but the cultural carrying capacity, too, which is
right.
why the unlimited doe harvest in suburbia. It's, what, five counties that involved in that?
Right, we have the suburban archery zone again. Yep.
Yep. Yeah, unlimited does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Anne Arundel, PG, Montgomery, Baltimore, and Howard.
Right.
If you're hunting with archery equipment, yeah, you can take an unlimited number of antlers.
Exactly,
here.
Yeah.
We had that. You might remember we had that zone previously.
Yes.
And then it went away for a while, and now we did reinstitute that zone starting this year.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
Yeah, we
so.
Probably have 35,000 deer vehicle collisions every year.
Wow.
You know, at $100+ million. So yeah, there's a lot of, you know, deer are really a good species to have because they generate a lot of money, and we use that money for a lot of good things. But they also, you can't ignore the negatives that go along with them as well.
Got it.
So,
got it.
For sure.
Yep. No question.
Yep.
So, all right. So, what is the effect of? You know what? I think I'll save that question. Think about this after the break. The effect of the EHD on the deer. What it does to the deer, other than just kills them. Okay. All right. So, all right. Well, here I am in the studio, and I forgot my cheat sheet for Clyde sports shop, but I've been with Clyde's for so long, and they've been with the Outdoors and Radio Show for so long, it's very easy to talk about some of the firearms and some of the things that they do. You know, they're a full-line Browning dealer, so for waterfowl, you want to do the A5, which is a beautiful recoil-operated autoloader shotgun with a 100,000-rounder five-year guarantee. For firearm season, for rifles, you want to look at the X-Bolt. That's what I'm trying to say, the X-Bolt. All magnum, all short magnum calibers, all standard calibers are available in the X-Bolt, and this is the most accurate big-game hunting rifle that I know of. As far as a commercially produced rifle, it's the X-Bolt from Browning. So you can see both of those and all the fine firearms and ammunition and gunsmithing and scope mounting at Clyde Sports Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne. They're just off Beltway Exit 9. Their phone number is 410-242-6108. That's 410-242-6108 for Clyde Sports Shop, website Clyde Sports, 2ssinthemiddle.com. How'd I do? Well, I hope so. I hope we did okay. Excuse me. So, do you have a beautiful fireplace that you never use? Robin and I did, too. It was just a hole in the wall in the back that sucked the heat out of the room up through the chimney. And we fixed that when we visited Hearth America at Backyard Billy's. Hearth America at Backyard Billy's is the premier fireplace and hearth dealer in the region. Robin and I selected Backyard Billy's to supply our Enviro EX35 gas fireplace insert after disappointing visits to several other Delmarva locations. Yep, Hearth America did the installation, and they've provided us with friendly, knowledgeable follow-up and service. We both enjoy the convenience, the beauty, and the room-filling heat from our gas fireplace insert. Hearth America at Backyard Billy's carries both Enviro and Regency brands, and now's the perfect time to own a new pellet, gas, electric, or wood stove from Hearth America at Backyard Billy's in Graysonville. Stop into the showroom, Route 50, Exit 44. That's Route 50 at Exit 44, and be ready for the cold weather now. Visit BackyardBillies.com or Hearth America Facebook page. Call 410-827-4500. That's 410-827-4500. Backyard Billy's open 7 days a week, Route 50 at Exit 44. If it's heat you want, Hearth America at Backyard Billy's is the fireplace. And Ira is smiling approvingly at our script writing expertise. Yeah, thumbs down, I know. Pardon me. Creative Concepts Taxidermy, with 30 years experience, realistically, accurately, and artistically recreates animals from all over the world. You know John George, he's a taxidermist. He specializes in big game animals from Africa, Asia, and North America. Located at 7194 Montevideo Road in Jessup, that's just off Route 1, is convenient to Route 100, Route 1, the 95-295 interstates. The Creative Concept Taxidermy Studio is 3,800 square feet with 19-foot ceilings. It's a 1,500-foot showroom with examples of all the fine work. There's a 1-ton floor crane. Can handle the largest life-size projects. Creative Concepts supports nonprofit conservation organizations and wounded veterans groups. Maryland's premier life-size studio, Creative Concepts Taxidermy, provides 5-star service for any animal from any continent, including those right here in the continent of Maryland. Hours are Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, or on weekends with an appointment. Visit creativeconceptstaxidermy.com or call them, 410-799-1558. That's 410-799-1558 for Creative Concepts Taxidermy. We'll be right back after these messages.
A couple of nice days here this weekend. Dry weather and above average temperatures. Quite a bit of rain headed our way for Monday. Sunshine mixing in with the clouds as we head through the day today. Upper 50s this afternoon. Low to mid 30s tonight. Mix of clouds and sunshine tomorrow. Again, temperatures above average, but highs again in the upper 50s. Rain possibly heavy at times on Monday, mid 60s. Turning colder Tuesday. Mostly cloudy skies with highs only in the 40s. I'm meteorologist Ken Boone from the Weather Channel for Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Madonna Seafood is known for having the best crabs and seafood in Harford County. Madonna Seafood is just a quick scenic trip from Baltimore up Delaney Valley Road. Madonna Seafood Carryout has delicious steamed crabs by the dozen to the bushel, great seafood, pizza, subs, and a whole lot more. Call into the carryout at 410-557-2722. That's 410-557-CRAB. Take exit 27B off the 695 Beltway, Delaney Valley Road North, Route 146. Turn left on Norrisville Road, and you've arrived at Madonna Seafood. Crabs for the holidays? No problem. Call 410-557-CRAB for tasty steamed crabs at Madonna Seafood. Madonna Seafood, year-round crabs, 4105 Norrisville Road in Whitehall, Maryland, 410-557-CRAB. That's 2722. www.madonnaseafood.com. Madonna Seafood is open every day at 11 a.m. Nothing is more frustrating than a dead battery. When your truck won't start or your boat or ATV leaves you stranded far from home, that's not good. The solution is Battery Warehouse. Not only does Battery Warehouse provide batteries for your car or truck, you can find marine batteries for cranking or trolling, ATV batteries, tractor batteries, motorcycle batteries, and batteries for all outdoors equipment. Did you know Battery Warehouse has batteries for wild game feeders, dog collars, cell phones, predator calls, and trail cameras? How about your video camera? Or if you tow your boat or trailer, your trailer brake control battery? Any battery you need. Battery Warehouse, convenient to you. Bel Air, Frederick, Cockeysville, Glen Burnie, Dundalk, Hagerstown, Westminster, Eldersburg, Parkville. Visit BatteryWarehouseMaryland.com online for the phone numbers and more information. When you need a hot flash, get to the Battery Warehouse near you.
It's a calling that's kept us free. It's a place to belong. What's the calling? It's doing a job that makes a difference. Serving your community and your country. It's part-time service where the impact is full-time. What's your calling? Air Force Reserve.
Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And now more from Alan Ellis and the Outdoorsman Radio Show on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
I like the first one. A little zippy keyboard there. Nice. Nice. Did you say more on hunting, Alan Ellis? Is that what you said? Oh, okay. Okay, that's cute. We're here with Brian Iowa. This is the Outdoorsman Radio Show you're listening to on the first day of the 2020 deer firearm season. And we were talking in the first segment about EHD and how deer get it. They get bit by a midge, which basically injects the virus into their system, kind of similar. They're bloodsuckers. People don't know that. They're kind of like mosquitoes, right, Brian?
Right, yep.
So, you know, they bite and then they inject this saliva to keep the, I guess, to keep the blood flowing into their body. You know, it's kind of an anticoagulant like a mosquito injects, but theirs happens, and I don't know if it's all of them or some of them or whatever, but they'll land on a deer to drink some blood and inject a virus into the deer. So once that happens and the deer acquires the virus, what happens to the deer? What happens to its body? Tell me this process.
It's similar to, it's a hemorrhagic disease, so it's similar to, you know, Ebola. Luckily, you know, humans aren't susceptible to it or anything. There's no human risk associated with it, but
right.
But it's purest sort of fundamental, you know, in its basic form, it causes cellular breakdown, tissue breakdown. There's different categories. There's hyperacute, which the deer drops over dead very, very quickly with no real external, you know, signs.
Wow.
There's the acute form, which we get reports of a lot. In the acute form, you know, the deer will carry the disease a couple of days before it dies. Oftentimes, they're found floating in water or near water because it causes a fever. So the deer goes, you know, they go to water to try to quench their thirst and, you know, due to that fever.
Right.
And then there's a chronic form where they actually survive it. They can look emaciated. A lot of times, it can be confused with chronic wasting disease. But they'll be emaciated. Their hooves will slough off. You know, I mean, so if their hooves look really in bad shape and tore up. If you happen to shoot a deer this year during the deer season and it looks that way, it's probably a good chance it was a deer that survived EHD.
Mm-hmm.
But basically internally, you know, it causes cellular breakdown.
Which basically means, as far as hemorrhagic disease, it means your internal organs are starting to break down. While the animal's still alive. So
while the animal's alive, right.
Yeah, so you've got lungs breaking down, you got heart tissue breaking down,
right.
You got liver breaking down, kidneys breaking down,
right.
and turning to mush, basically. I know you've probably examined these animals, and I don't know if you're looking for, you know, more, you know, freshly found animals that, you know, just died yesterday or this morning or whatever, but as far as, you know, having a biologist take tissue samples. But when you examine that animal, is there any signs of that tissue breakdown when you eviscerate that animal?
Yeah, you can definitely tell. The lungs will look abnormal.
Yeah.
But externally, you don't even have to go internally. A lot of times you can look at the tongue.
Okay.
And the tongue or the roof of the mouth will actually have lesions.
Yeah.
You know, sores.
Yeah.
Or they'll be blue.
Like fever blisters. And that's why the nickname blue tongue.
Well, blue, they're actually different. So I mean, they're the same, but they're different. So there's different strains of this virus. Some of them are blue tongue. Some of them are hemorrhagic disease.
Okay.
And then within hemorrhagic disease, there's like six different strains.
Right.
Like we had two that we actually sent away this year for testing, and they both were EHD strain 6.
Okay.
But then there's also true blue tongue strains as well.
Okay.
But in any case, yeah, as part of this internal breakdown, you know, you end up with not enough oxygen in the blood.
Ah.
And so you end up with blue tongue.
Blue tongue. I get, okay.
You know, you end up with a blue tongue.
Like a person who's not getting oxygen, their lips turn blue and
right,
that type of thing.
Right.
Okay.
Same thing. So
I got
that's
it.
where the name, you know, the name comes from. But
got
in
it.
Any case, yeah, so if you find a deer near water, dead, suspiciously dead, has lesions on the tongue or lesions on the mouth, roof of the mouth, you know, very, very good chance that it was a hemorrhagic disease.
Got it.
Yeah, that killed it.
Got it.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, moving right
nothing,
along.
Nothing that can be done about it. You know, you just have to let nature run its course every year. But like I said, we've had it for a long time, and the deer population always bounces back where it goes through.
So I'm wondering, Brian, if you're managing your deer herd for, you know, mature whitetails. I mean, they're going to get it just as easily as a fawn and die just as tragic of a death as any other deer, doe or whatever. But I'm wondering if the mosquito spraying programs that we have here in Maryland, somebody who does that for hire, you know, there's mosquito patrols and all that stuff. I mean, I go back past one over in Delaware that's got about 15 trucks sitting in the lot. And the question I have is, if you're managing, could you actually hire one of these companies to come and treat your creek banks, or, you know, fog your creek banks or something like that, and maybe cut this down a little bit? I mean, I'm just throwing this out there.
That's a good question. And I'll be honest with you, I don't think that's ever been looked at. You know, you got to consider the range, like if you want to do this from a deer management standpoint. So obviously, like you said, you're managing for an older age structure of bucks. You got to think that the home range, you're more than likely not going to be able to treat everywhere that deer covers,
of course.
Especially as you approach the rut.
Right.
Could it help? Maybe. You know, that's a good question. I don't think that's ever been looked at.
Let's play stump the biologist. So I got it. Oh,
yeah,
cool.
I don't know if you could ever see any measurable impact from doing that.
Yeah,
or if the,
it's a thought.
Or if the cost would offset the
value. Well, so some of these guys' cost is no factor. You know, I mean,
yeah,
it's just,
you're right, and yeah, you know, the other thing, not to throw another disease out there, but you know, if you're ever on the shore, particularly on the upper shore, the other one you got to worry about is brain abscesses. Though, so you could spend a lot of money trying to treat midges to grow older bucks, and then just have the older bucks die from a brain abscess.
That's true.
You know,
I get it. I understand
so,
it. You know,
It's just a tough world out there. Mother Nature, she's not real kind sometimes.
She's not. So. But brain abscess disease is basically endemic in the soil in the upper shore counties. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, it's not a virus. It's a bacteria. It's out there naturally occurring in the environment. And it seems like it impacts bucks more than does, probably due to rubbing activity and fighting activity. And, you know, it enters the brain through the sutures in the skull, possibly, mm-hmm. you know, around the antlers. And then it literally causes a brain abscess, and ultimately kills a deer. And unfortunately, it just really seems to impact older age structure bucks.
Right.
Or older age class bucks.
The ones that we're hunting. Now,
and the upper shore, it probably has as high a prevalence as anywhere in the country.
I think that is the epicenter of that, isn't it?
Pretty much.
And I'm sure you talk about that in your northern deer managers meetings and your southern deer managers meetings.
More so in the southern deer, with the southeast deer group. But yeah, that's always an important topic for sure. And
right.
There's been quite a bit of Georgia and North Carolina universities both have done quite a bit of research, and as far as I know, they're doing research on that.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. So we're about to take our second break here, and the question for the next segment is going to be, Brian, explain a little deer biology. I want to talk about the glands of a deer that are used in the rutting process, and I also want to talk about when somebody harvests a mature buck. People say, well, why are you taking the prime deer out? Well, that's not the question. The question is, has that animal reached its peak, or is it past its peak as far as passing on the genetics? Okay?
All right, I'll do my homework.
Do your little homework real quick. Search the memory bank, and we'll go from there. All right?
All right.
Hey, Hearth America at Backyard Billy's in Graysonville knows fire. Are you looking for a new backyard grill? Pellet grills by Traeger, the Big Green Egg, the Kamado Joe, they're all here at Hearth America at Backyard Billy's. How about premium gas logs by Real Fire to install in your fireplace to give it that beautiful glow on a chilly evening? Gas wall fireplaces. These are really cool. You look at the wall and it's on fire, but it's actually contained in this wall fireplace. That can add a special look to any room, like your man cave or your back room, where everybody gathers for, holidays and things like that. And gas fire tables. You've seen these. You sit out on your deck or your patio and you've got a gas fireplace there and you've got this beautiful little fire on your deck. I'll tell you, it's really nice. So see them all at Hearth America at Backyard Billy's. Now's the perfect time to own a new pellet, gas, electric, or wood stove from Hearth America at Backyard Billy's in Graysonville. Stop into the showroom, Route 50 at Exit 44, and be ready for the cold weather now. Visit BackyardBilly's.com or the Hearth America Facebook page. Call 410-827-4500. That's 410-827-4500. Backyard Billy's open 7 days a week. Route 50 at Exit 44. If it's heat you want, Hearth America at Backyard Billy's is your fireplace. Creative Concepts Taxidermy. Right there on... 7194 Montevideo Road, just off Route 1. You're going to have some editing to do, Ira, aren't you, to clean up all these spaces? No? Okay. Let's start again. Creative Concepts Taxidermy, 30 years experience, realistically accurate and artistically recreates animals from all over the world. Located at 7194 Montevideo Road in Jessup, Maryland, Creative Concepts is right off Route 1, convenient to Route 100 and the 95-295 interstates. John George is your taxidermist specializing in big game animals from Africa, Asia, and North America. The Creative Concepts Taxidermy Studio is 3,800 square feet, and the showroom is 1,500 square feet. When you visit, you can see examples of the work like a life-size muskox thundering down the tundra or two leopards climbing after each other in a tree. Very nice stuff. Creative Concepts supports nonprofit conservation organizations and wounded veterans groups. Maryland's premier life-size studio, Creative Concepts Taxidermy, provides five-star service for any animal from any continent, including those right here in Maryland. Hours are Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, or call on weekends with an appointment. Visit creativeconceptstaxidermy.com 410-799-1558. Call 410-799-1558 for Creative Concepts Taxidermy, and we'll be right back after these messages. Madonna Seafood is known for having the best crabs and seafood in Harford County. Madonna Seafood is just a quick scenic trip from Baltimore up Delaney Valley Road. Madonna Seafood Carryout has delicious steamed crabs by the dozen to the bushel, great seafood, pizza, subs, and a whole lot more. Call into the carryout at 410-557-2722. That's 410-557-CRAB. Take exit 27B off the 695 Beltway, Delaney Valley Road North, Route 146. Turn left on Norrisville Road, and you've arrived at Madonna Seafood. Crabs for the holidays? No problem. Call 410-557-CRAB for tasty steamed crabs at Madonna Seafood. Madonna Seafood, year-round crabs, 4105 Norrisville Road in Whitehall, Maryland, 410-557-CRAB. That's 2722. www.madonnaseafood.com. Madonna Seafood is open every day at 11 a.m.
When you need them, your local volunteer fire department routinely answers the call. Whether it be a fire, traffic accident, or a cat stuck in a tree, there is always someone there for you. However, because of declines in memberships, departments are becoming understaffed and struggling. Here's how you can help your neighbors and your community. No matter what skills you may possess, you can make a difference. Your local volunteer fire department desperately needs your help. Can you direct traffic? Install a smoke alarm? Help at fundraisers? Your community needs you. You don't have to fight fire to be a volunteer. Will you make that difference? Will you answer the call? Brought to you by the National Volunteer Firefighter Recruitment Center, a program service of the Volunteer Firefighter Alliance. For more information on how you can help and make a difference, visit www.nvfrc.org. That's www.nvfrc.org.
I fish. I also clean local waterways so others can fish and swim. I help build public boat ramps for easy access to the water. I provide fishing and water safety education for kids. I maintain a healthy fish population so tomorrow's anglers can enjoy a catch. I prevent unwanted species from spreading into waters where they don't belong. I restore the condition of rivers to help fish and wildlife thrive. I fund long-term plans to protect our lakes and streams. I do all of these things and more, all because I buy a fishing license. When you buy a fishing license, you do a lot. In fact, every dollar from a license purchase protects and maintains your local waterways for future generations to enjoy. To learn more about how you can get your fishing license, go to takemefishing.org. That's takemefishing.org.
Veterans face treacherous situations filled with peril while serving our country. Many veterans come home physically injured, suffering from PTSD, have traumatic brain injuries, or other ailments. At an unprecedented time in history, our most vulnerable veterans are isolated at hospitals and their homes. Imagine having to shelter in place forever. Over the past year, Help Heal Veterans has sent nearly a 500,000 therapy kits to isolated veterans and active military. Help Heal Veterans, with the support of citizens like you, creates, manufactures, and distributes therapeutic art and crafts projects for our veterans and military, making things better together. Join us in supporting an isolated or sick veteran and help them through this desperate time. To learn more, visit healvets.org. This message is furnished by Help Heal Veterans, a not-for-profit organization that has been helping veterans for 50 years. HealVets.org.
Hey, so what's a great way to spread awareness that driving high is illegal everywhere? A catchy song, of course.
You can't run, or you can't drive high. You can't run, or you can't.
Friendly reminder, don't drive high. If you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
And now more from Alan Ellis and the Outdoorsman Radio Show on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Hey! Hey! We're waking everybody up before they get in the tree stand. or ground blind or deck, wherever they're hunting from. I'll say it's good. All right. Alan Ellis here with Brian Eiler, our deer project leader for the whitetail and sika deer and fallow deer here in Maryland. You're the deer guy. We'll just call you the deer guy.
The deer guy.
Yep. And we left you with a question, okay? People who, you know, don't understand trophy hunting, or you see it online, there's a guy with a big mature whitetail buck, and you say, well, that's a beautiful deer. Why did you kill that big, beautiful deer? Well, because it was there. It was at its prime.
Yeah.
Yeah, or maybe a little bit past its prime. So the question I left you with is, you know, when do deer start to breed, at what age, and then where does that start to tail off, where the, you know, that the genetics become, you know, less, I guess the deer becomes less prime and starts to go down there.
Right. So I guess first off, to start, you know, we all think genetics, and we all get wrapped up in genetics, and we all get wrapped up in buck genetics, but don't forget that the buck's only 50% of the
equation. Yes, correct.
We also have a doe out there, and she has to have those right genetics as well. And there's some genetic studies that have shown that, you know, there's definitely does that produce, you know, very large bucks, and then there's does that don't, regardless of who she breeds with, or
right,
who she was bred with.
So the
buck's only part of the equation, and you can manage the buck side of things, you know, through management, but it's hard to manage that doe side. You can't look at a doe and say, yeah, that doe is going to produce big bucks.
So right.
That's the first thing I think probably to point out is that it's just not all about the buck, but. And then as far as, you know, I mean, bucks typically reach their prime somewhere around 6, 7, 8 years old, somewhere in that area.
Okay.
But of course they carry those same genes throughout their life.
Yeah.
Their breeding will taper off after they reach their prime, of course. But,
right.
But there's been a lot of research done in this arena, and yearling bucks successfully breed a surprising number or proportion of, you know, females every year. They can sneak in and get the breeding done or whatever.
Well, those sneaky little buggers, huh?
Sneaky little buggers.
Yeah.
You remember when you were 16, right? You remember what it was like. So, but anyway. so, and
no
of course
comment.
that 8-year-old prime buck was a yearling at 1.2 and was carrying those genes when it was a yearling.
Got it.
So we always, you know, we get complaints about some of the timing of our deer seasons and the fact, oh, you're taking that big buck, you know, it's being harvested before it has a chance to breed.
Early muzzleloader season. You get most complaints about early muzzleloader season.
Early muzzleloader, and unfortunately even some about the youth season. So
yeah, that's one that bothers me.
Yeah, but in any case, you know, that buck, that big buck that was harvested in early muzzleloader or in junior season, well, it already bred and spread its genes probably the previous 3 years.
Okay.
So it's not like they don't breed until they're a prime and you got to save them until the rut.
Right.
Let them breed. They've already, their genes are out there.
They're done. Yeah.
And it's only 50% of their genes that are producing the next buck anyways, you know, the doe is just as equally as important. So,
okay.
So it's,
good point.
There's more to managing for bigger A, or, you know, larger antlered bucks than just saving a big buck through the rut, I guess is what I'm trying to.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I mean, you know, people, you're right. People don't consider the does, you know, they just don't. It's just an overlooked thing. So
yeah,
I might have to get you to write an article about that. We'll talk about that. Anyway.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
Well, that answers the question. So, look, we're going to have a lot of people drop off here at the end of this hour. They're already getting in the stands and so forth. So give us your little safety talk, please.
Yeah, so we do this every year, and we'll keep doing this every year.
Absolutely.
Be safe. It's not worth it. You know, it's firearm season, and whether you're on private land or public land, wear your fluorescent orange, because you never know who might be there that shouldn't be there.
It's just a hat.
Land.
It's just a hat and a vest better.
Yeah. You know? You know, the more visible, the better. Definitely a minimum of a hat, but preferably a hat and a vest.
Yep.
You're in a ground blind. You have to have, you know, you have to have the 250 inches displayed on the outside of the ground blind.
Right.
And if you're in a tree stand, which you probably are, wear a harness and, you know, and use a safety line going in and out of the tree. We had 10 tree stand, you know, every year tree stand injuries and
yep.
fatalities are our number one accident. Last year we had 10 injuries or 10 accidents. Two of them were fatal.
Yep.
Due to tree stands. So you always think it's not going to happen to you, but it can, and it's not worth the risk.
Go online and look at MarylandHuntingQuarterly.com, all spelled out. We have two stories in the winter issue just as to serve as a warning. One fellow fell. He had unsnapped his harness and stepped on the first rung of the ladder, or first step going down. I think it was one of those climbing stick things. Foot slipped. He went off, landed on his feet, fractured his ankle to pieces, three breaks in his lower leg. We've got a picture of his leg from his perspective. He snapped a picture with his phone of his leg that's going the wrong way. He said, I looked down and my muck boot was facing the wrong direction.
Yeah.
The other fella fell out of a ladder stand. The ladder stand actually came out from underneath him because he was going to do something with a strap, and the ladder stand fell, and he wasn't connected. And he landed on his side. He broke three ribs. He broke his right arm in three places. And we got the x-ray in the magazine. So you can take a look at that online. I think you'll find it very interesting and hopefully inspiring to keep you, you know, safely locked into your harness at that point.
I have a friend that's wearing a boot right now because he went out of a tree stand and fractured his heel. Luckily, he wasn't up very high. And it was a case where he was reaching around to put on his safety harness, and the top of the stand gave away.
Oh, man.
He landed on his feet.
Yep.
And fractured his heel. You know, he did that in, I can't remember if it was late archery or early muzzleloader. But in any case, it, you know, he's very lucky that that's all it was. But it, you know, his deer hunting is now done from ground blinds.
Ground blinds,
you know,
yeah.
Or whatever. So he compromised as far as deer hunting this
yep.
season goes. So,
yep.
yeah. Be safe.
I understand.
Yeah.
So, very good. Yes, we want our listeners' audience to enlarge and not decrease by means of an accident. So,
right.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit. We have a few minutes left here in this segment. We want to talk a little bit about the straight wall cartridge regulation for this year. These are cartridges that do not have the high-powered rifle cartridges are kind of a low-powered rifle, but they still do a very adequate job. These are cartridges that don't have shoulders.
Right, or bottlenecks. I refer to it as like a bottleneck.
Bottleneck is a good one.
Not
yeah.
a bottleneck cartridge, like a 30-06 or a 308 or a 270 that necks down.
Necks down, right.
Straight wall cartridges are literally that. They're the same diameter. The case is the same diameter from the primer to the bullet.
Exactly. So you've got the big one is the 350 Legend. You've got the 450 Bushmaster. You've got the 444. You've got the 450 Marlin. You've got the 4570. Am I losing any? Did I miss any?
I think you covered the big ones. Yeah,
yeah, that's the most popular.
And also like a 44 Magnum.
Yes.
357 Magnum in your handguns. Now those, you got to be careful because in a rifle they might not meet the energy requirement, but in a handgun they will.
357 will.
It also opens up handguns in those counties as well.
Ah, got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
20 years of doing this, this is probably the most popular regulation that I've been involved in, change that I've been involved with.
Selling a lot of guns out there when they're available.
We received a lot of positive feedback on this. Of course, we didn't invent the wheel, you know. I mean, there's a lot of states that have went this way already, Ohio, Iowa, you know. I mean, it's
Delaware right next to us.
Delaware right next door. So, yeah, and Delaware is a little bit more restrictive, I think, as far as what calibers they allow. But yeah, so we're not the only ones. But for those that don't know, if you're in a county that only allows shotguns or traditionally has only allowed shotguns for deer firearm season, you can now use one of these straight-walled rifle or handgun calibers in that county for deer hunting. Like you said, ballistically wise, they're more similar to a shotgun, a hot shotgun slug than they are to a bottleneck rifle cartridge. But
right.
they definitely do offer a ballistic advantage over a shotgun slug.
Yes. Yes, they do. But ballistically, they also drop off a little bit quicker than your .30-06 fired out.
There's no comparison. There's no comparison. A .30-06 at 400 yards is probably still carrying more energy than one of these at the muzzle.
Probably.
There's a big difference between the bottleneck cartridges. So they're still safe. You know,
well,
these counties that allow shotguns, they're still a very safe alternative. But they do open up the weapon choice, and I can't prove it, but I would say inherently people can probably shoot them more accurately than a shotgun.
Okay.
I would think.
Yep. So, well, I will tell you, and I've said this on the air before, I had a friend who was very much into going to gun shops and that type of thing, and I asked him to look for a .450 Marlin for me. And he found one of the originals that was made by the Marlin Company, one of the first ones, without the ported barrel, without the Remington stamps and all that stuff. And I put a Leopold on it a couple of weeks ago and shot it, and I'm carrying that in the blind today.
Yeah.
So, yes, sir. See what happens.
I have a 350 Legend that I've been dialing in. And I really like it. And I'm probably going to, I mean, I mainly hunt in Frederick and Washington County where it's...
You can use a rifle.
I can use whatever rifle I want. But I'm probably going to end up using it a good bit of the time because I like the way it shoots.
Yeah. And the .350 doesn't have a lot of recoil.
For the listeners out there, if you have younger hunters or hunters that are recoil sensitive, the .350 Legend is a really good alternative.
Exactly. I mean, a shotgun will thump you.
Yeah.
You know?
You know, 20 gauge isn't as bad as a 12 gauge, but even a 20 gauge will hit you pretty hard.
That's true.
Where these 350 Legends have, you know, comparable ballistics and don't have near the recoil.
Exactly. I was actually quite pleased with the Marlin. A lever action gun has a tendency to thump you a little bit heavier than a, you know, just because of construction, a little lighter and that type of thing, it'll thump you longer or harder than a rifle or a shotgun does. But I was very surprised that the 450 is very tolerable on the recoil. And of course, when you've got a deer in your sights, the recoil doesn't matter because you don't feel it.
Right.
You know, you usually don't hear the gun going off at that point because you're so excited. So, you know, but
preparation up to that point.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
Right. So, now, but the 450 Bushmaster, I have not shot one of those yet. But,
no.
But my understanding is they have quite a bit more recoil than like a 350 Legend.
Exactly.
But they're a popular alternative as well.
Now. 450 Bushmaster. Yeah. 45-70 been around for a long, long time. Got 45 was the caliber. The 70 was the 70 grains of black powder. That's how it got its name. It's since been, you know, changed to a center fire connotation, but you're still shooting that big 45
right.
caliber bullet. And
right.
the 450 Marlin that I have has a belt around the bottom of the cartridge, just above the primer space there. It's still a straight wall cartridge, but that was put there so you wouldn't accidentally load a 450 Marlin cartridge into your 45-70. It keeps the
keeps the
cartridge from going into the chamber of the 45-70.
Yeah.
So, yep, all popular and sold a lot of guns in Maryland with that little rule and regulation. And when we come back on the other side of the news break, we'll talk a little bit more about the other new season in Maryland, which is the primitive season. So for those of you listeners who are signing off now, and, you know, I appreciate you staying with us till this hour. And for those of you who are still with us and, you know, maybe don't have the opportunity to hunt today, but you might be going out tomorrow, you might be going out sometime this next week, you know, we always want to urge you to stay safe, as Brian said, with your orange and your harness and your tree stands. And know the regulations, know the rules. Be very careful with the way where you're pointing your firearm. Remember to check your background if you're going to take a shot at an animal. You know, not a skyline shot. Know your background. And, you know, have a very safe and successful opening day today. And I hope we all do. And that's our hope and prayer for you. So there's the music coming up. That means we're at the end of the first hour. Robin's not here, so I'll say what she usually says. Even in this deer season, you're going to be eating at restaurants. You're going to be going out. You're going to be doing some Christmas shopping. So wear your mask, social distance, wash your hands, use hand sanitizer, and let's have all of you around for next hunting season. We'll be back right after the news.